ज्ञानमपि सर्वेषाम् अज्ञतेनान्तरात्मना श्रद्धवान् भजते यो माम् स मे युक्ततमामतः.
And of all yogis,
he who always abides in me with great faith, worshipping me in transcendental loving service, is most intimately united with me in yoga, and is the highest of all. Purport by his divine grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The word bhajate is significant here. Bhajate has its root in the word, in the verb bhaja, which is used when there is need of service. The English word worship cannot be used in the same sense as bhaja. Worship means to adore or to show respect and honor to the worthy one. But service with love and faith is especially meant for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One can avoid worshipping a respectable man or a demigod and may be called discourteous, but one cannot avoid serving the Supreme Lord without being thoroughly condemned.
Every living entity is part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
And thus, every living entity is intended to serve the Supreme Lord by his own constitution. Failing to do this, he falls down. The Bhagavatam confirms this as follows.
Ye esham purusham sakshad atma prabhavaham ishvaram na bhajanti abhajananti stanad
brastha patantyataha. Anyone who does not render service and neglects his duty unto the primeval Lord, who is the source of all living entities, will certainly fall down from his constitutional position. This verse we are reading from this afternoon is the final or concluding verse of the chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. In the sixth chapter of the Gita, Lord Sri Krishna is explaining the system of Sankhya Yoga. He is describing the various methods as prescribed in the Shastra by which one can control the body through fasting, through various disciplines, asanas, how to control the prana or the life force, and how to control the mind by fixing it on one point or samadhi. Arjuna is admitting to Krishna that, my dear Lord, this process is very impractical to me. After all, for someone who is a yogi living in a cave in the Himalayas, who has no responsibilities, no commitments in this world, such a process still appears very impossible, but maybe for him. But look at me, my Lord. I have three wives. I have many children. I'm a politician. I'm a warrior. People are depending on me. And besides that, you're telling me I have to stay in this battlefield and fight. So this method of worship, this method of yoga, seems very intolerable and impossible for a man like me. And Krishna is explaining here, Yoginam api saravesham madhyate nantaratmana sradhavan bhajate yomam samme yuktatamamataha.
that of all yogis, one who with great faith and devotion worships the Lord, always remembering him, he is most intimately united with the Lord in yoga, and he is the highest. Manmana bhavamad bhakto madhyajinam namaskaru mam evaishasi satyam te pratijani priyosime. Krishna says, always think of me, become my devotee, worship me and offer your homage unto me. In this way, you will come to me without fail. This is my promise to every living being. In the third canto of Bhagavatam, Lord Kapiladeva has explained to his mother Devahuti that I have explained to you this very, very vast, intricate and complicated philosophy of Sankhya Yoga, which thoroughly explains how this material creation is working and why, what is the absolute truth, what is the living entity, what is karma, and how to attain the transfer from material consciousness to spiritual consciousness. In fact, all the great scriptures in the world, the Bible, the Old Testament, the New Testament, the Torah, the Quran, the Kabbalah, the Granth Sahib, the Vedas, the Buddhist Sutras. Ultimately, all of these scriptures are giving so many injunctions, instructions, so many things. Do not do this, do this. So many processes of purifying the heart. But Lord Kapiladeva explained that all these scriptures and all the instructions are all meant simply to bring the living entity to the perfectional platform, which is to always remember Krishna and never forget Krishna. The gopis of Vrindavan, they are considered the highest yogis. Did they have any mystic powers? They were simple village women. They were not in the caves producing ashes and gold and listening to the sound of the universe and controlling people's minds and making millions of disciples. They were simply milking the cows and churning the butter and cleaning the house. But they were considered the supreme yogis. Why? Jeeve pibaswami kamata deva govinda damodara. Because they were always praying to their tongue, please never stop chanting Hare Krishna. Huh? Never stop chanting the names Govinda, Damodar and Madhava. In this way, they were always thinking of Krishna. This is the perfection of yoga. A devotee does not care for any other position save and except being the humble servant of the Lord. Gopi Bharatura Padakamalayora Das Das Anudas. A devotee does not care for any amount of material acquirement. Does not care for any amount of mystic powers or even liberation. Does not want followers. Does not want a prestigious historical name that will always remain in the books. He simply wants to be the humble servant of the Lord's servants and worship the Lord with all humility. That's all. But this is his only ambition. The Bhagavatam describes that the supreme occupation for all humanity is that which brings one to the ultimate platform of loving service to the Lord without any expectation of anything in return. Unmotivated, uninterrupting service to the Lord and his devotees. That is the only aspiration of those who are sincere to please Krishna. Because you see, why should we compete with God? He is Yogeshwar. He is full of all mystic potencies. Mystic powers are available to the demons. In the Ramayana, there is a story of a very great mystic yogi. He was most powerful. Why? Because he performed the mystic yoga system. He performed tapasya. He controlled his senses, he controlled his mind, he controlled his life air to such an extent that he forcibly brought Lord Brahma before him to give him whatever benedictions he wanted. And by the almighty power of Lord Brahma, he was given the ability to fight in such a way that anyone he fought would be conquered. This person was the son of Ravana, the eldest son. His name is Indrajit. And just to test his great powers, he went to the abode of Lord Indra, the king of heaven, who is very famous because he is always victorious due to the strength of his thunderbolt. And this Indrajit, he gained his name Indrajit because he effortlessly defeated Indra. Just like a grown person captures a child and punishes him. He was undefeatable. So during the great battle in Sri Lanka between Ravana's soldiers and Lord Sri Ramchandra's army of monkeys, the great elder brother of Ravana, his brother, Kumbhakarna, was killed by Ravana. At that time, Ravana was very much distressed. How could anyone kill Kumbhakarna? He is so big and so huge and so strong. How is it possible? He became very morose. Not only because he was mourning over the death of his beloved brother, but he was also, he was struck with fear that who could be so formidable and powerful to kill Kumbhakarna. At that time, Indrajit stood forward. He said, "Ravana, my dear father, please do not worry. I will go into the battlefield. I will mount my chariot with my armies and I will destroy this useless, insignificant son of King Dasarath and all of his armies." When Ravana heard the conviction of Indrajit, the unconquerable, he became very happy and enlivened. And he gave all his blessings to his son. And his son armed himself with the most beautiful effulgent armor. He mounted his chariot drawn by black horses. And with his formidable army, he marched into the field of battle. At that time, Vibhishan, Ravana's brother, who had taken shelter of Sri Ramchandra, he warned Ram and Lakshman that this Indrajit, he is very powerful and clever mystic. We must be very cautious. He has never been defeated. So the soldiers, headed by Nala, Nila, Angada, Sugriva, Hanuman, Jambavan, and various other formidable soldiers of the Kishkindha tribes, they all went to fight with Indrajit. And he was shooting so many arrows with such force that no one could see anything except his arrows. They filled the sky. He literally became invisible. So nobody even knew where these arrows were coming from. One moment he would appear in the sky in one direction and he would be showering them with arrows. And then the next second he would disappear and then he would appear in the sky in another direction and he would be shooting arrows. And his arrows were shot with such force, and they were so sharp that factually he was inundating the entire army. And the entire army of the monkeys were simply laying on the ground screaming in pain. And then Dasarathi Nandan Ram and Sri Lakshman, they appeared before Indrajit. And Indrajit began to shower them with his formidable arrows. And it pierced their bodies, and they fell to the ground. How is this possible? Because you see, Lord Brahma gave Indrajit the benediction that anyone that you fight with your arrows will be defeated. And because Brahma is a great devotee of Sri Rama, Lord Ram has to be very careful that his devotees' benedictions are always kept intact. He had to protect the word of Brahma. So therefore, in order to protect the word of Brahma, Lakshman and Ram had to accept defeat at the hands of Indrajit. And they were laying there. And everyone in Ram's army was destroyed. Except Hanuman and Vibhishan. At that time, Indrajit, he thought, we have won the war. Ram and Lakshman and everyone else is killed. And with his soldiers, he began to blow on his conch shell the sound of victory, and he returned to the palace of Ravana, and he very proudly boasted to his father that they are all slain. They have all fallen due to my great strength. And Ravana embraced his son, and they became very happy, and there was a grand festival taking place. At that time, Vibhishan took Hanuman, and he said, "Let us look to see who is still alive on the battlefield." And as they were looking, they were walking through the battlefield. There they saw Angada and Sugriva. And they saw Nila and Nala, Gandamandana. In fact, they saw all the most formidable chieftains of the army laying there covered with arrows, just crying in pain. And then they came upon Jambavan. Jambavan was so much filled with the agony of these arrows, he could not even see. Vibhishan said, "Jambavan, is that you? Are you still alive?" Jambavan said, "I am hardly alive. I cannot see you, I cannot hear you, but I can tell Hanuman is with you." He said, "Hanumanji, you are the only one that can save us. Ram and Lakshman are laying in a condition covered by the arrows of Indrajit." He said, "There is one way that you can save them." He said, "You must go very quickly to the Himalayas. There is a mountain of the name Rishaba. You must climb to the top of the peak of that Rishaba mountain. And then you look toward the north, toward the great peak of Mount Kailash, the abode of Lord Shankar. And right between these two great peaks, you will find a beautiful mountain that is covered with life-giving herbs." And he began to describe the various names of these different herbs. How one can bring life back to a dead person. It was called Mitra. What is the word? Sanjivani?
Like that.
And another one will heal all bruises, cuts, and dismembered limbs. Another will give strength back to one who has been completely destroyed in battle. In this way, he began to name all the various different herbs, and he said, you collect all these herbs, and you bring them and administer them to Sri Ram and Lakshman and save them. And then you bring them to the rest of the armies and bring them back to life. Hanuman, we are all dependent on you. Now, this is the glory of Hanuman, that he never considered what is possible or impossible. Hanuman never considered himself very great. Hanuman always considered himself simply the insignificant servant of Ram. But when it came to pleasing Sri Ramchandra, he could do anything and everything. He never questioned. This is the difference between us and such great souls. When we are asked to do something that is difficult, we think, oh, Guru Maharaj, I'm sorry, I cannot do that. I don't have time. Huh? How can I do that? I don't have time, or I don't have the money, or I don't have the strength, or I don't have the intelligence. I just can't do these things. I will do what I will do. But Hanuman was not thinking in terms of time. He was not thinking in terms of his own strength. He was not thinking in terms of his own money. He was only thinking in terms of one thing: what will please Ram. And therefore, he completely was freed from any false ego, ahankar. In the process of bhakti, the annihilation of the false ego is not simply through fasting and the performance of tapasya, but it is by becoming so engrossed, so immersed in trying to please the Lord and his devotees through service that you completely forget yourself. You are only thinking of Krishna. You are only thinking of Krishna's devotees. So much immersed that you no longer have any consideration what is possible or what is impossible. That is why it is said, Mukam karoti vachalam pangum langayate girim yat kripata maham bande sri gurum dinatharanam. If one attains the mercy of the spiritual master, if he is a lame man, he can cross mountains. That is impossible. If he is dumb, he can speak beautiful poetry. He can preach and convert the hearts of millions. Even if he is blind, he can see the farthest stars in the sky. Are not we ashamed of ourselves that we are so petty in our neophyte condition that we are thinking, oh, this is too difficult, I cannot do it? That means we have no faith. Hanuman's power was in his faith. He had such faith in Ram that he would just do anything and Ram would empower him to do it. Similarly, Ram will empower us to do anything if we have the faith of Hanuman. But as long as we have faith in our own excuses and justifications why we cannot, then God will empower us to just keep making so many more excuses. Huh? This is the glory and the example of Hanumanji. So Hanuman, as soon as he heard the word of Jambavan, he went flying across from Lanka to the eastern tip of Bharatvarsha, over the ocean. And then he leaped, and with one jump, he flew through the skyways to that holy mountain of the name Rishabha. And he climbed the mountain, and there, to the north, he saw the beautiful snow-capped peak, Kailash Dham. And before him, there was that beautiful mountain with all of its herbs, life-giving herbs, and vegetation. When that mountain saw Hanuman coming, did not want to sacrifice her herbs, and she drew all the herbs back into her soils. And Hanuman was thinking, what is this nonsense? Try to understand. Listen very carefully here. Try to understand that we are all like this mountain. Huh? Everything we have belongs to Ram. Correct?
Krishna says in Gita, Mokta Ram Jagatapasam Sarva Mokam Eshwaram Sudradam Sarva Bhutanam Yatvam Om Shantim Rishyatis.
Everything is my property, Krishna says. All planets belong to me, and everything within each planet belongs to me. Nirmama, you are not this body, and nothing that belongs to this body is yours. The greatest illusion, Lord Rishabhdev has said, Janasya moho yamaham ameti, that we are thinking that I am this body and everything in relationship to this body is mine. My body, my family, my wealth, my prestige, my business, my abilities. Nothing is yours. It is all God's. He has given it, and someday He will take it away. At His sweet will, everything will be taken away. So, just like we were speaking just 2 days back, we were in Pandharapur. About 100 of our devotees went on pilgrimage to this holy place of Pandharapur. And we were describing how one of the eldest son of Jagannath Mishra, Vishwarup, how he took sannyas, how he left home, entered into the forest, and became a jati or a sannyasi. So Jagannath Mithra began to think, I am lamenting so much because my child has left, but actually Krishna has given me the child. And now Krishna wants to take him away. What can I say? That child belongs to God. Everything belongs to God. But we, like this foolish mountain, when the Lord wants to take what belongs to Him in our care for His service, we want to hide it. Huh? We want to retract it and say, no, no, Krishna, I don't have anything. And if I do, I'm using it. It's already too busy for you. It's mine. But Hanuman is very merciful. He understood that this mountain was in Maya. Maya means to think you are the proprietor and you are the enjoyer. And bhakti means to understand that Krishna is the proprietor and He is the enjoyer. Therefore, that mountain was just like you and me, trying to keep what God has given us for ourselves. We don't want to use it for Krishna because we might lose something. What kind of faith is that? Rupa Goswami says, anything you give to Krishna, know that you will gain 100 million times over. Sudama Vipra gave a few pieces of rice to Krishna, and in return he attained an abode more beautiful and luxurious than that of Indra, the king of heaven. That is how Krishna works. So, Hanuman, being a sadhu as he was not content to just go by the mountain and say, oh, you are not giving. Like the spiritual master, if the disciple is not willing to surrender to Krishna, the spiritual master will do everything within his power to get that disciple to surrender. Huh? So Hanuman lifted up that mountain and said, all right, you mountain, if you're not willing to give me, I'll take everything. And he uprooted the entire mountain and held it up with his hand and began to fly back to Sri Lanka. Now was Hanuman thinking, oh, this mountain is so heavy, how will I do it? It was very heavy. Hanuman did not have the power or strength to fly with that mountain. But Ram has the strength to maintain all the planets. He is keeping every planet in orbit by his strength. Huh? For him, what is, for
What is the way to the mountain? If he wants to empower his devotee, that devotee can do anything.
So as Hanuman came with that mountain,
as he came close to Ram and Lakshman, simply the fragrance of those herbs brought them back to life. They were perfectly healed of all their wounds. Actually, externally it appears that Ram accepted defeat from Indrajit to fulfill the benedictions of Brahma. But in actuality, he accepted defeat simply to give Hanuman the chance to render this most glorious service. There is no greater pleasure in the heart of Krishna than glorifying his own devotees.
And the battlefield of Kurukshetra,
Krishna could have destroyed those armies within a second. When he revealed his universal form, the Virat Rupa, to Arjuna, he was showing that simply by opening his mouth, he could swallow all these armies in the form of time. But he wanted Arjuna to get the credit. He wanted to glorify Arjuna as the greatest hero for the rest of eternity. So therefore, he empowered Arjuna to win this war. So similarly, Ram put himself in a desperate and helpless position by his own sweet will, just to show the world the glory of the bhakti of Hanumanji. Just so the whole world would hang in their house a picture of Hanuman running with this mountain. And Ram is very happy when you have that picture, because Hanuman has given his life in the Ram service. It is described that the Lord, he says, that because my devotee has surrendered everything to me, I surrender everything to my devotee. So then, this herbs, the fragrance of the herbs, brought to life everyone on the battlefield. And they all became very rejuvenated and anxious to fight again. And when the tumultuous roars of Ram and his armies were heard, Indrajit became very disturbed. So then Ravana, he became very angry. How is this possible? And he sent the son of Kumbhakarna and many other great soldiers with hundreds and thousands of Rakshasa warriors into the battlefield. And Ram and Lakshman and the monkey soldiers just completely destroyed them all with their formidable bows and arrows. And when it appeared that everything was finished, then Indrajit said to Ravana, "Let me go." And Ravana ordered Indrajit, "You are our last hope. You go out there." Hours he created clouds in the sky, and from these clouds rained solid steel, tridents, bows and arrows, clubs, rocks, and all abominable substances. It was raining on the monkey soldiers and raining on Ram and Lakshman. And he could not be seen. So Lord Sri Ram, who was Yogeshwar, the master of all mystics, tried to understand whatever power Indrajit had, he was getting from Ram. But he was not willing to admit it. This is the difference between a devotee and a demon, a sura and an asura. A devotee is willing to accept and admit that whatever I have, God, it is because of you. But Indrajit was thinking that this is mine. And he was using it against the will and the purpose of the Lord. But what chance did he have? Just like a cat plays with a foolish rat, but ultimately kills it. Similarly, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Ramchandra, was simply playing with this demon. Ramchandraji was told by Vibhishan that at this time, Indrajit, he is completely buried us with his bows and arrows and his various other artillery weapons.
And he thinks that we are all in a defeated position. And now he has gone to a sanctuary where he is doing a puja, a sacrifice. And if he completes this sacrifice, he will become so powerful and so undefeatable that Ram, I do not think we will have a chance. We must kill him before he completes this sacrifice. So Ram told Lakshman that you take our soldiers and you go and you destroy him. So Lakshman went into the battlefield. And the soldiers of Indrajit were all thoroughly defeated by Lakshman and his armies. And Indrajit had to stop his sacrifice and come out to fight himself. At that time, it was Indrajit and Lakshman facing one another. Indrajit was very proud. He said to Lakshman that, now you dare to face me? You dare to stand before me in battle? I will send you to the court of Yamaraj on this very day. We all have Indrajit within us. Huh? Do we not? Are we all not a little proud? Indrajit was the symbol of this pride. That is why a devotee, he does not want mystic powers. Because he knows the more you have in this world, the more of a tendency you have to be proud. And as soon as you become proud, your whole relationship with God is disturbed. I am very learned. I am a very good cook. I am a very good singer. I am a very expert businessman. I am a very professional manager. I am a very, very compassionate doctor. Huh? I am a very wonderful mother. I am a very learned and obedient son. Huh? I am a very great devotee. Huh? We are all inclined toward being proud. Even on this level, understand that this is the voice of Indrajit within your heart. A devotee realizes that I am nothing. I am simply the insignificant servant, completely depending on the mercy of God for everything I can do, for everything I can say. I cannot even, my heart cannot beat without the mercy of the Lord. I cannot take one breath to nourish my lungs without the mercy of the Lord. If we are dependent on the Lord for such crucial, elementary, life-giving activities as this, what to speak of everything else we can do? It is all by the mercy of Krishna. And here, Indrajit was facing God face to face, telling him, I will destroy you with what you have given me. Huh? And Lakshman, he said, Indrajit, anyone can speak very boldly on the battlefield, but let us see. And then Indrajit began to shoot his arrows, and Lakshman began to shoot his arrows. And it was a very fierce war. The battle that was ensued, even the demigods on the higher planets were struck with wonder, watching. The head of the charioteer of Indrajit was cut and fell to the ground. All of Indrajit's horses were killed and fell to the ground. His chariot was destroyed. His bow and arrow was destroyed. Indrajit was standing helplessly alone against Lakshman. At that time, Indrajit disappeared. He wasn't to be seen anywhere. And he appeared again in Lanka. And he got a new chariot, and a new army, and new armor, and new bows and arrows, and again he came out into the battlefield to attack.
How powerful is this yogi?
But then Lakshman, he placed a beautiful and effulgent golden-colored arrow on the string of his bow. And he pulled it back with all grace, and he let go. And as that arrow soared through the sky, it was effulgent like thousands of suns. And as it descended from the sky toward Indrajit, everyone was completely silent. The demons and the devotees alike, simply waiting to see what will transpire. And then that mighty, effulgent bow soared down and severed the head of Indrajit from his body. And that head, which was decorated with beautiful bejeweled crown and earrings, fell to the ground. And there was a great roar of victory in the armies of Sri Ram. And the Rakshasas, knowing that their death was imminent, simply fled back into the gates of the palace of Ravana. And then Lakshman was brought back to Lord Sri Ramchandra. And Ramchandra was so happy that he embraced Sri Lakshman. He laid him down, and with the Lord, with his own hands, he began to massage him and try to relieve him of any pains due to the arrows of Indrajit. In this way, the love, the divine love of Ram and Lakshman was being manifested for the ultimate benefit of all living beings. So try to understand that there is no use being a great yogi. If we really want the greatest thing, we should simply become the servant of Ram and Lakshman. They are the greatest yogis. They are the greatest, most powerful. Janmadya Sagata, everything is emanating from them and them alone. So what else is there to attain in life greater than being their humble servant? Therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has played Nada Namna Janamna Sundarim Kavitam Vajagadisha Kamaye Mama Janama Ni Janama Nishwari Bhavata Bhakti Rahoita Kipai. My Lord, I do not want any amount of wealth. Because wealth is like a mirage in the desert. There is the promise that it will satisfy all our desires. But when we attain it, our desires are simply increasing. I do not want beautiful women. Although people in this world are mad after a beautiful wife or a beautiful girlfriend, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained that the attractions of this world are just a tiny little glimmer of a reflection of the supreme attractive beauty of Krishna. I do not want followers or disciples or prestige or fame. I do not even want liberation. Because liberation is also a selfish desire. We are still thinking that I do not want to suffer anymore. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he prayed, I only want one thing. I want to be your servant, birth after birth. If you want me to suffer,
My greatest pleasure will be to suffer for you. If it pleases you.
Samsudir Haritoshanam. The supreme perfection of the Lord is to please Krishna. To please Krishna by our humble service. And one who takes the position of such a humble servant, he is the greatest of all yogis.
Ambarish Maharaj was just a humble king. Durvas Muni was such a powerful yogi. When Durvas Muni tried to destroy Ambarish with his defiant weapon, he created a monster made of fire that could devour the universe. Ambarish Maharaj, he didn't try to fight. He did not try to make some mystical arrangement to save himself. He simply stood there with folded palms saying, Mari Krishna, Rake Ke, Rake Krishna, Mari Ke Krishna. If you want to kill me, I will be very happy to die. And if you want to save me, then what do I have to worry about? I am your servant. Durvas Muni will be very happy to die. And if you want to save me, then what do I have to worry about? I am your servant.
Durvas Muni had to fall and kiss the feet of Ambarish Maharaj.
Huh? This is the power of bhakti. This is the power of simply putting yourself as the dependent servant of the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna.
And the most practical and immediate method by which we can put ourselves
at the humble service of the Lord is to chant His holy name.
All of the glory of God is within His name. Nam Nam Akadi Bahuta Nija Sarva Shaktish. One who takes shelter of the holy name of the Lord and who humbly serves the Lord's devotees. There is no person more dear to the Lord than him. And Krishna promises all of his protection to such a great soul.
So these most beautiful and wonderful historical stories, they are not simply to entertain our minds,
although they certainly do. They all have a very, very deep, profound, and essential message that is to be captured within our heart.
And what is that message? Let us make our first and foremost priority in life to cultivate devotion to God, to learn how to depend on the mercy of God.
By serving, by associating with saintly persons,
and by chanting His holy names. Let us make this the top priority of our existence. After all, we're getting old. Death is soon coming. God has appeared in His name.
Just as Ram appeared on the battlefield to destroy Indrajit and Ravana, that same Ram has appeared in His name to destroy the demons in your own heart.
But unless we call out His name and attentively chant, the mercy of the benediction of the Lord, we will be losing. The opportunity is at hand. So let us chant, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. And find the supreme peace, the supreme happiness within our own hearts.
And let us broadcast the glories of the holy name for all the world to hear. Let us give up our prestige, Let us give up all of our laziness. And let us learn the art of surrendering to the Supreme God of our life by chanting His holy name. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj ki. Jai.